So this first canto is prefaced like that, and here we see in the sages of Naimisharanya, they're talking to Sudha Goswami. They want to know what is the essence of Dharma, all these things, and what is Krishna's incarnation, how does that relate to these things. So when he starts to explain everything, Sudha Goswami explains that Srimad Bhagavatam is the incarnation for this age, it's the essence of all Dharma, it's the very best. You know? So then, when Maharaj, and it comes down to the point of Maharaj Pariksha's birth, because his whole history is important, because he's going to be the person who's receiving all this information. And then, of course, it digresses even a little bit more, because now it's talking about how Arjuna, in the course of trying to save Maharaj Pariksit, all these kind of things, the background, the history. And I think it's kind of good for us too, because in our devotional service, it's very much dependent upon our background, our history. Somebody tells you, yam yam vapi smaran bhavan, whatever you think at the time of death, that estate where you will attain. So then somebody thinks, I'll eat, drink, and be merry. And then at the moment of death, I'll just call out, Krishna, and I'll go to Krishna. But you've got to read the fine print there. It says, bhava, what is your state of consciousness? So all these background features are very important. We don't notice the effect, maybe directly in our conscious mind, but this is what allows our conscious mind to actually work properly. So this is the whole history. And now, of course, there's a very difficult situation. There was Ashwatthama threw the Brahmastra weapon, and Arjuna is thinking his own life in danger. And that's kind of interesting, because Arjuna is Kshatriya, and so he's facing death. He's already established, that he's not going to be influenced by death, death before dishonor. So feeling his own life in danger, maybe he's, Krishna's arrangement, he's not completely self-realized at this moment. Or else he's thinking maybe that my service is being threatened. That if I lose my life, then I'm going to lose Krishna's association. I won't be able to serve Krishna. So he began to address Lord Krishna. And so what I have in our PowerPoint show, let's try and go up here then. Okay, can you see that?
Yes, we can, Maharaj.
Okay, because these are the prayers. Basically 22 through 26, and so I'll chant them, and everybody else can chant right along. Arjuna uvacha, Krishna Krishna Mahabaho, Bhaktanam Abhayankara, Twam Eko Dhaya Manananam, Apavargo Sisangshritahe, Twam Adya Purusha Shakshad, Ishvara Prakrite Para, Maya Vyudasya Chikshaktya, Kaivalye Stita Atmani, Saiva Jiva Lokasya, Maya Mohita Chaitasaha, Vidhatse Svena Viryena, Shreyo Dharmadi Lakshanam, Kimidam Svit Kuto Veti, Deva Deva Navedmiaham, Sarvato Mukam Ayati, Teja Paramadarunam. So, of course, today we're also going to do text number 22. The next few days, they're covering the next few texts. And this is one of the nine processes, no? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam. So, in the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada says that every devotee should select some prayers for his own personal recitation. And this is one part of our yoga, especially if you're taking second initiation, second initiated devotee. Then Prabhupada says, Krishna's prayers and Arjuna's prayers in chapter 11 are very famous in Bhagavad Gita. And he says Bhagavatam is full of hundreds of prayers. And he also mentions the Gotamiya Tantra, having very nice prayers. And I can't remember if I Googled that or not, The Prabhupada mentions it. And prayers are very nice. You take the time to slow down and think about the content, because these prayers tend to be very concentrated. And of course, just the language is very beautiful. And in the very last purport to this section, Prabhupada will say that Arjuna is now asking Krishna. He wants to know something. Where is this coming from? What is this? You know? And so Prabhupada said, but before we ask the Lord, we must always offer proper prayers and glorification, illumination, you know, set the proper attitude before we offer prayers. And he says, even though Arjuna is such a great devotee, he also followed the etiquette. But of course, the situation is rather difficult, so his prayers just basically take three verses. Of course, it's like Uttara's prayers too. She's being chased by a localized thermonuclear weapon. Running here and there, smart bomb. And so she's running to Krishna, 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 Mahabaho. I think she says the same thing, like that. And of course, down below it says, Ishvara Prakrite Para, in the second prayer. And it's the same thing Kunti will say, Ishvara Prakrite Param. Yeah. So many of these prayers have the same words and stuff like that. Yeah. So very beautiful, very nice. Let me go down. Translation. Arjuna said, "Oh my Lord Sri Krishna." Okay, what's the first thing he says? You are the lover of Radharani. And you have slick black hair. Yeah. No. This is his first declaration. "Oh my Lord, you are the almighty personality of Godhead. There is no limit to your different energies. Therefore only you are competent to instill fearlessness in the hearts of your devotees. Everyone in the flames of material miseries can find the path of liberation in you only. You are the original personality of Godhead who expands himself all over the creations and is transcendental to material energy. You have cast away the effects of material energy by dint of your spiritual potencies. You are always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge. And yet, though you are beyond the purview of the material energy, you execute the four principles of liberation characterized by religion, and so on, for the good of the conditioned souls. Thus you descend as an incarnation to remove the burden of the world and to benefit your friends, especially those who are your exclusive devotees and are constantly wrapped in meditation upon you." Yeah. And then, "O Lord of Lords, how is it that this dangerous effulgence is spreading all around? Where does it come from? I do not understand." So the whole mood of the prayers, of course, is very much, you know, in terms of Arjuna's specific situation, being threatened by an effulgence which is covering the entire universe. And so he identifies Krishna, glorifies him as the all-powerful, like that, you know. And he has, because he's all-powerful, then he can protect his devotees. Then we see he goes ahead and talks about how he's transcendental to material energy. You know, he's not influenced by the material energy because he's so powerful. He's always situated in eternal bliss. Okay. But this is very common in many prayers. It says exactly the same thing. You're all powerful, you're transcendental, you're pure. And it says, but, you know, though you are beyond the purview of material energy, you execute the four principles like that. Why? To benefit the conditioned souls. Then the second reason, of course, you know, yada yada hi dharmasya glanya bhavati bharata bhizanama dharmasya tadatma ashrajamiyam Paritranaya, paritranaya sadhanam vinaschaya taduskudam dharma samstarpanarpanya. So he comes to establish dharma, to protect dharma, but also to benefit his devotees. And Prabhupada says, of course, that Krishna can save his devotees by any kind of means like that. He can do all kinds of strange things, you know. But he comes then to show his pastimes, activities, so the devotees can get more impetus to become fully, you know, animated in their Krishna consciousness. So he comes to benefit his friends and give them special association like that. And then Arjuna, having established this relation, then Arjuna then asks this question, what is this? Where is it coming from? And it's not like a kind of idle philosophical question. It's very much in terms of, you know, trying to save his own hide, this position. And if you're saying, you know, probably Elijah would give because he doesn't want to lose his service. You know, I would say, if we go on talking about fearfulness and fearlessness, that I want to become fearless because I don't want to get, you know, annihilated or suffer, you know, weird things, you know, suffer bad experiences. But Arjuna is probably, of course, he might be in yoga maya, you know, thinking like this, but probably he's thinking more like, wow, I don't want to lose my service. Later on, when Krishna left, of course, he's experiencing great anxiety. Okay, so next text. I guess you can see it. Wait a second there. 1722. Arjuna Uvacha. Krishna Krishna Mahabaho Bhaktanam Abhayankara Twameko Dahyamananam Apavargo Si Sanskritahe. Arjuna said, O Krishna, O Lord Krishna, O Lord Krishna, who is the Almighty? Bhaktanam, of the devotees. Bhaktanam. Yeah? Bhaktanam. Abhayankara, eradicating fears. Twam, you, Eka, alone, Dahyamananam, those who are suffering from. That's interesting. Those who are suffering from. Apavarga, the path of liberation, are in the midst of material miseries. My Lord Sri Krishna, you are the Almighty Personality of Godhead. There is no limit to your different energies. Yeah. Therefore, only you are competent to instill fearlessness in the hearts of your devotees. Why can he do it? Because he is Almighty. Yeah, he has unlimited energies. Everyone in the film at least finds liberation in you only. So he had the purport here. By his divine grace, Aishri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Written maybe when he was in Vrindavan. Prabhupada may have written this. My goodness. Reading the Bhagavatam, all these things in Vrindavan. You know, very, in some ways, of course, Vrindavan is, you know, what is there? Keshi Ghat and Bhangsi Bhat and Radha-Damodar Temple and Rupa Goswami Samadhi. And here Prabhupada's so merciful. He's coming down to this level of the first canto, which is almost like an Upanishad, you know, talking about Krishna in very general terms and things like that. You know? So, must be very, you can just imagine that, Prabhupada sitting there in the Vrindavan with no material facilities and a little warm maybe, but also at the same time, no horns. Days there was no cars in Lloyd Bazaar. I don't even know if they had bicycle rickshaws. I guess they did. You know, like that. Probably even had guys pulling the rickshaws, like, you know, so on. So Prabhupada's sitting there and writing his purport with his pen, like that, looking at the Acharya's works, you know, and absorbed in the mercy of Rupa Goswami. Wow. At the same time, they're not giving up the higher aspects of, you know, of Vrindavan and the gopis and Subal and Madhu Mangal. And writing these purports. Wow. Arjuna, I guess he's kind of talking to us like he's talking to a monkey or something like that. Arjuna was aware of the transcendental qualities of Lord Sri Krishna. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So he's not in his complete mind. As he had already experienced them during the Kurukshetra war, in which both of them were present. Therefore, Arjuna's version of Lord Sri Krishna is authoritative. So first Prabhupada is dealing with that. It's not just like somebody, you know, mouthing off some prayers he's heard in the Sunday school. But he actually knows these things, that Krishna is all-powerful and Krishna has unlimited energies. Krishna is almighty and is especially the cause of fearlessness, for the devotees. A devotee of the Lord is always fearless, because of the protection given by the Lord. Material existence is something like a blazing fire. Yeah? In the forest, which can be extinguished by the mercy of Lord Sri Krishna. The spiritual master is the mercy representative of the Lord. Yeah? Therefore, a person burning in the blazing fire, in the flames of material existence, may receive the rains of the mercy of the Lord through the transparent media of the self-realized spiritual master. You know? So my life, at least, it's interesting because when I think of a blazing forest fire, I think of this being burned up. It's just like being cooked, you know, in a kind of homogenous fashion. But actually, my life is even more miserable. Is that I think of one nasty possibility, like, you know, the GBC is going to restrict me from traveling because I'm a troublemaker, or else, on the other hand, you know, I'm going to something I did, you know, 40 years ago in my family life is going to reoccur, or you know, or devotees will discover that when I was, you know, a brahmachari, I used to steal peanuts and offer them my own deities, or, you know, so many things like that. Or more horrible things, you know. It's one thing interesting when you're a sannyasi, when you're traveling, you get so many different people driving for you, and it's such an experience, you know. And my experience is that actually it's quite rare to find a good driver, you know. Actually, quite rare. Most people, you know, they're in the traffic and it's going like anything on the freeway, and they'll be looking in their mirrors left, right, and they'll turn the turn signal on and make the turn. They won't even give people on the sides of them a warning, just, and then shooting in and out of lanes and stuff like that, you know. So you're sitting there with this tension in your stomach, with this revival and fear, and you can't really say anything because, you know, the person's taking care of you for free and everything else like that. And even if you do say anything, what's going to be the result, you know? And so a couple of times I almost got killed. And a few drivers doing weird things like that. You know? So this is the, to me, and then of course it becomes peaceful and people receive you properly. So it's more like a fire where there's just, you go this direction, you get burned, and then you go this, and then you get a little relief, and there's a little bit of water there and stuff, and you get a little relief, and you get burned again, and there's a little relief, and you get burned again. So it's just kind of more painful than just being burned alive in a homogenous fashion, because you're also getting this kind of relief from time to time. And also because the fears are not just like one kind of fear. It's just like, you know, it's like you have this fear and that fear and that fear and this fear. And then the background of all this is that, my God, I'm suffering from this and this may happen. This is horrible. But even if this doesn't, then there's all these other fears and anxieties and possible horrible scenarios like that, you know, running around here and there. Wow. So that's the kind of blazing fire I'm experiencing in the immaterial life. And I think that many people, it's just, you know, it's just, I guess it's just continuous, because actually material life is nothing. There's nothing here. As soon as we turn away from Krishna, we turn away from everything. So we go into this comatose state with nothing. So to create some kind of happiness, then Krishna has to create distress. So the only way you're feeling happy, I'm kind of happy in Denver, it's kind of warm and hot, because before I was suffering in, you know, the freezing cold in Vadadesh or something like that, you know? And so, I mean, that background is there. You know? So Socrates, in the last dialogue, the Phaedo, he talks about this nicely too. But that happiness and distress is like a two-faced God. Whenever we're in distress, we should be thinking, oh, in just a little bit I'm going to be in happiness. And whenever we're happy, we should think, oh, a little bit I'm going to be in distress, like that. You know? So, but basically everybody, I'm sure, is having the same thing of just like you suffer and then, you know, you lament because you remember enjoying when you didn't have these problems, and then you get happiness, but at the same time too you're fearful because you remember how, you know, just very little while ago, you know. And so it's a whole distressful condition. And if we haven't gotten any transcendental position, then God, what is it? It's just simply one nightmare after another. And when the Maya comes along and offers you a solution to everything with a pack of cigarettes, smoke cools. I don't think they sell those anymore. Of course, it's a famous lecture Prabhupada talks about how stupid people are. They're inhaling fire and they call it cool. You know, I remember the commercials, like 1957 or something, 58, 59. They show this guy suffering, and he would pull out a cigarette and light it. And suddenly there'd be this waterfall and this beautiful, you know, full forest scene. He would kind of look up in peace and the smoke would curl up in his suit, you know, like that. So smoke cools. So what's the solution? Okay. It says we can get a solution by getting rain, you know, a rainstorm in the transparent media of the self-realized spiritual master. So this is an interesting point that struck me. It says self-realized spiritual master. So what does that mean? Samsara dosakola, nikunja yuno rati keli siddhayi. Does that mean he's like engaged in confidential service to Radha and Krishna in their pajamas in the forest groves of Vrindavan or something like that? You know, one purport recently, and it's consistent with what Prabhupada's saying, he says a spiritual master must at least know his relationship with the Paramatma, like that. And Upadeshamrita is kind of the same thing, is that when you become a Goswami, a sannyasi, then you're qualified to become a spiritual master. So there are different levels of spiritual masters. Of course, part of the idea is that he should be self-realized, and not just realizing high things, but also realize his limits. Somebody told Socrates he was the wisest guy in Athens, and Socrates went around looking for somebody wiser and came back, and his friend said, "Did you find anybody wiser?" And Socrates said, he said, "Actually, what I discovered is that I know I'm a fool. You know, I know I'm a fool, and many other people are all. Everybody else I met was also a fool. But the only difference is that I know I'm a fool, whereas a lot of them think that actually they're actually quite intelligent." So, self-realized spiritual master can be mean that he's self-realized means he knows he's a fool, and therefore he knows his limits. He knows how to preach in the base of certain scriptures. He's got his logic nicely collected into a nice consistent logic, you know, to get us out of the material world, and to raise us to his level of appreciating Krishna in the form of Paramatma, like that. Mm-hmm. And Paramatma feature is not Bhagavan. It's just you can see the hand of God in things, and you can grab that hand, and you can, you know, like that. And so that's very nice, because then you can get advice, you know, in the blazing fire, turn left here, go right here, you know, like that. So that's sufficient, to have a Goswami, a spiritual master. And of course, Prabhupada says, you know, that everybody should accept Uttamadhikari. And so, yeah, anybody who's on that level, and not confused, not fallen, as a spiritual master, he's going to be have himself, you know, be looking for higher authorities. And so, you know, either through him or through so many means, the disciple then can definitely have been sheltered, you know, a more advanced, you know, spiritual master. And of course, you know, Lord Balarama is the spiritual master of all spiritual masters, and Krishna is the spiritual master of Lord Balaram, kind of. So it's very, very important. When the information comes from an authorized source, and it doesn't have to be that high, you know, that alone can get us out of the suffering in the material world. You know? I remember when I used to work for Pacific Bank Associations, something. I was living in the temple, but I would go out for the swing shift from 4 o'clock in the afternoon until midnight, and they were processing master charge transactions, you know, for banks. It was in San Francisco, banking thing. So I'd come home late, you know, at night, and, you know, have my key to the temple and go in and check things, make sure they were all locked up, you know, get a little rest and come to Mangalarti. So when I was coming back, I was walking through the Mission District, which has all these clubs and stuff, and lower class area, and everything, you know, lower class you can imagine. And I saw this one kind of, like, you know, Mexican guy walking down the street, you know, people walking here and there, even at 10 o'clock at night. He looked like he was a little drunk and had been drinking a little bit. And basically looked like something like he lost his job, came home and got in a fight with his wife and slapped her and walked out, and then got drunk to try and deal with it. And now that wasn't working, and he was kind of walking now, wondering what to do. And just spontaneously I said, "Well, don't forget God." And it's just like everything just went away. He looked at me and kind of like nodded slowly and started smiling. Catholic, so probably he had this background, you know, kind of nodding, and then yeah, everything was kind of okay, you know. Yeah, okay, I made some mistakes, but I can, you know, try and correct them, and God is there. He likes me. He'll help me. He'll help everybody, you know. So that's what it takes. It doesn't take a real high, you know, high thing, but maybe some, when you say it, you have to know what you're saying. You know, people pick up on the background, you know. of the words. And then the Prabhupada goes on to say, the spiritual master by his words can penetrate into the heart of the suffering person and inject knowledge, transcendental. That's interesting. It's got a reverse adjective order. And inject knowledge transcendental, which alone can extinguish the fire of material existence. So this is an important point, because you know, Krishna didn't give Arjuna a super weapon. Krishna gave him intelligence. And that's what it takes. Actually, there is no problem. You know? The problem is simply we're misunderstanding our situation. And that comes from our own fault, our own anger, you know, things like that. Maybe just from innocence. So the spiritual master can penetrate through the senses. We can hear it. Can penetrate through the mind. You know, we can know it. And then finally touch the heart. And then we can you know, be stimulated in our relationship with Krishna. Prabhupada says that ultimately, Socrates says the same thing. You can hear it, you can understand it, but ultimately you have to actually experience your personal relationship with Krishna. And when you're in that relationship, serving him in that fashion, then and then only can you really surpass, you know, the clutches of Maya and all fear. Because then you realize by serving him, he's all powerful, you know. And beyond that, I have a relationship which can't be broken. You know? Amogalila Das. He was there at Prabhupada's final days, and he was doing the night shift one time with Prabhupada. And he was there alone. Prabhupada was under the mosquito net, and skin and bones, you know, and different things. But at some point, Prabhupada, Tamal Krishnamurti came in the morning early, and they were getting ready to go take Prabhupada to Vrindavan, I think, from Delhi or Bombay, on the train. So then Prabhupada just kind of raised his hand, you know, from the elbow. And Mogalila said he didn't know what Prabhupada meant like that. And then Tamal Krishnamurti kind of looked. He was packing Prabhupada's luggage. And he kind of laughed and he said, Prabhupada wants you to massage his hand, you know. And so then Mogalila said he touched Prabhupada's hand. And it was just skin and bones. But he said it was just like unbelievably soft. It was like liquid something or other, liquid nectar, just touching his hand. So he started just very gently massaging and looking at Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was looking at him. Then he had this experience. He said he didn't know how long it lasted, like for 5 minutes or you know, 5 seconds or something, you know. But it was like he had this experience that Prabhupada was telling him, that Krishna was telling him, that there was nothing he could do ever that would ever make him not love him like that. So the intense experience, yeah? And that it doesn't matter what you do, I'll never stop loving you. You know, and so he had that experience like that. And that's again, when we maintain that, then you know, then we're completely free from this material fearlessness. Of course, fearlessness on a higher level is quite good. The gopis and everybody else also experience fear, but that's fun. That's fun. It's like when parents, you know, play like a monster and scare the little kids. Kids love it. You know, they want to be frightened and chased around. Yeah. I think that's some more in the PowerPoint showing. Okay. Then I just pulled up the samsara, because every day we chant this, so we should learn the word by word meanings for the Gurvastika at least. You know. And then we can actually contemplate, come to the dhyan level, and contemplate the words. We can put them together properly, which is the verb, you know. So maybe everybody knows samsara of material existence, the cycle. Dhavanala. Dhava means forest, and anala means fire. Dhavanala. Lida means a suffering or affliction. And loka. The people, samsara, dava, nala, lida, loka. All the people are suffering in this forest fire. Tanaya, like mantra, yeah, to deliver, karuna, of the mercy. Gana is a cloud, gana sham. So gana gana tvam, tvam means like. Yeah. So he's like a cloud. Praptasya, who has obtained, kalyana, auspicious qualities, guna, arnavasya, was an ocean. Yeah. Yeah. Tanaya karunya gana gana tvam taptasya kalyana gunar navasya vande guru shri charana aravinda. Of course, charana means feet. Like that. So it's interesting, Hansaduda, when he first came to San Francisco, all of us first met him, he said this is the spiritual master's first business. And you see again, like Arjuna's prayers are very much focused upon Krishna as the supreme controller. People coming in the temple room now. People coming in the temple room now, so I'll try and talk a little louder. Arjuna is focusing on Krishna as his first attitude towards Krishna. Krishna is focusing on Arjuna in terms of his first thing is that Krishna is all powerful. So this is the first business of the spiritual master, is to relieve Krishna's anxiety. I'm sorry, to relieve the anxiety of a living entity like that. Because as long as we're in anxiety, we'll be everything else. You know, we can't. We can't actually appreciate the higher qualities and mercy of Krishna. Okay. So that's all we have for our PowerPoint show. Ramananda wants to take control back. The only other point I was thinking about is just this fact about how we are all, how much fearlessness I have and everything else. I remember one time we were on the Rajmando Parikrama, and we were camped by the side of the Jamuna, way out in the Braj, you know, after marching for days. So I woke up early in the morning, and I was walking across the sand bed of the Jamuna, and it was quite some distance, you know, and then the camp is receding behind us, and all alone there. And I'm remembering how Prabhupada says that the dacoits will cut your throat even for a lota, and I had my lota with me, so my mind was starting to become fearful. I'm walking, and all the comforting association of our camp, and the night lights is disappearing. And suddenly I walked right into the Jamuna. Ah! It was about ankle deep, you know. So then, and then I was taking my bath, everything else. And I was thinking, my gosh, it's been like, you know, over 20 years I've been following this process, and still have all these fears and stuff, you know. What's the use of this process? But then I was seeing, well, no, that's my mind. And my body has a reaction. My mind has a reaction, but at heart I can see I've actually changed. You know, that I'm at heart, even though these things go on deep down, I have some, you know, more confidential relation with Krishna, and it doesn't come exactly with just hearing things. It comes, I think, more with going through different experiences, you know, and seeing how Krishna really does protect you. I'm sure people have had like very difficult emotional and social situations, or physical, you know, prolonged physical, you know, distress, and just taking shelter of Krishna, and then it changes your heart. So even in your mind, up to the last minute, we may have different reactions, panic reactions, but they're just superficial, you know. And have I become completely fearless? No, yeah, like that. But I'm better than I am. And also the thing is, the process is so gradual that sometimes you don't notice how much you're changing. So it's very interesting to meet people that you knew like earlier in your life when you were a student or something, and you haven't seen it for many years. And you see then the contrast about how much you've actually changed and stuff like that. You know? And so I think it's working. We're becoming fearless. You know? And like Arjuna, you know, trying to keep ourselves in proper perspective with proper prayers. And then we can, and of course, what's it going to be? It's going to be another emotional exchange between Krishna and Arjuna. Not going to be this superficially saving his hide. But all these things for Arjuna are very deep. You know, even experiences, liberated experiences, advancing from the Brahma Jyoti to Mahavishnu, from Mahavishnu to Vishnu, Vaikuntha to Lila avatars to Sankarshan, Sankarshan to Dwarka, Dwarka to Mathura, Mathura to Vrindavan, you know. And within Vrindavan there are different things, and Krishna himself is expanding, you know. And we also can expand our service abilities, intrinsic service ability, nature, as a tool, in ever new ways. Krishna doesn't know, we don't know. So some of these things, even though in the material world, we're developing things that are so new that they'll change the character of the spiritual world forever. You know? So with Arjuna, this is going to be a very deep experience dealing with this Brahmastra weapon. So there any questions or comments like that?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I have a couple of questions for you.
Okay.
First of all, you said earlier in your class, you talked about Arjuna, and in verse number 22, it appears that Arjuna never saw the Brahmastra weapon before. Although he was taught it by Dronacharya, it's just hard for me to understand how he never saw it, since I seem to remember reading in the Mahabharata that he used that Brahmastra weapon to kill Jayadratha. So that's my first question. Did he really never see it before? And second of all, the second question is, let me take care of that first.
I don't really know. You know, and also the thing is, he learned it, but maybe he didn't actually throw it, or it was a different experience being on the receiving end than it was the throwing end, like that. You know, so I don't really know. Like that.
Also, you towards the end of your talk, you were talking about, you were quoting Hans Kedusa, making the statement that the prime duty of the spiritual master is to alleviate the sufferings of the living entities in the material world, the transcendental knowledge. And there's a similar point that's made when Parikshit Maharaj is cursed by the Brahmin boy, and the boy's father is disciplining the boy because of the action, and he makes the same point. He says, "Esha Rajan Paro Dharmo," that the prime duty of the king, his first and foremost duty, is to protect the citizens from all types of suffering. So my question there is, that seems to be the universal principal duty of anyone who accepts dependence, is that they have to make sure that their dependents are not in any means suffering. Is that correct?
Again, I don't know like how it's like, you know, the primary thing, but what you're saying is, many other citations come to mind when the personified Vedas are like, you know, glorifying Vishnu. They glorify him for his qualities, and the foremost quality is his quality of reclaiming the fallen conditioned souls. So it seems that, yeah, that mercy, you know, mercy is one of the greatest qualities of Krishna. Like that, yeah.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, and I enjoyed your class very, very much.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, can I throw in a real easy question?
Oh, please.
I've always been so curious what Vishnu means. What is Arjuna's name as Vishnu means?
It's an easy question, but I also have been curious. I think I read one time, but I can't remember what it is.
Oh, too bad. I was just hoping you would know.
I think if you Google it or look in the database.
I tried, and it just always translated as Arjuna. It's the name of Arjuna, but what does it mean?
Yeah, I don't think it's kind of. I don't think it's a Leela name. As I remember, I read it one time. You know, I think it refers to some quality like that.
Yeah. You're right. I did read it one time, Maharaj. It was actually in Subramanian's publication of the Mahabharata. And I don't know if it's in Krishna Dharma's, because there's an incident there where Arjuna's, when the Pandavas, it's very pretty much the end of their hiding. And it's like the very last day. And Arjuna has to fight with the Kauravas when they're supposedly still in hiding. And the son of the king, if his name escapes me, Arjuna reveals to him his real identity. So then he asks Arjuna, what are the different names of Arjuna? And so Arjuna goes through those names, and one of them is Jishnu, and he explains why he was given that name. But I don't remember. It's been a long time since I read that particular version.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. All right, that's not so difficult. That's fine. I didn't know that.
An adventure.
Dhanyavad, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Very nice class.
Huh.
I really like the tune you chose to chant those prayers of Arjuna.
Oh, oh,
where did that come from?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah.
I was in South America once, and I did traveled with Maharaj from Lima, Peru to Ecuador, and by the time I got to Quito, I was really sick. I was like half out of my body or something. Are you still there?
Yeah, I muted the microphone because it reduced the background noise.
No problem. So, okay. There was an announcement in the temple that there was a naturopath offering free treatment to the devotees, so I went over to see this person, and she did some muscle testing and would give me drops, 10 drops of this, 20 drops of that, and I could feel she was fixing me on the fly, and I was so impressed that I said, look, her name was Patricia, I want the whole, I don't care what it costs, I want your whole treatment. Anyway, at the end, she gave me some drops because somehow she detected there was some fear circulating around my heart. And and I also, you reminded me of this when you said about that fear thing in the dacoit, something Prabhupada said, at night you're at risk if you're isolated or if you're in the boonies or something in India. But anyway, she said, and she was treating me for physical things, but evidently, she understood something about life fears. Anyway, she said some fear was circulating around my heart, so she gave me some drops to take for that, and it worked. And I was, I would be in a situation where I'd be in a room with my back to the door, and then somebody would just burst into the room or something. I would jump. And I thought, like you were saying in the class, oh, that's great, I've been doing this for like 30-something years, and I'm like this, I'm like afraid because somebody opened the door or something. So, but this, it could be a physical thing too. Anyway, it got rid of it, these drops. It was interesting.
Yeah, different levels. Even one time we were trying to get some mice out of the boga cage in a temple in San Francisco on Valencia Street. They made a chicken wire cage thing, like some mouse got in there, so Jayananda was chasing him around, standing in there. And it ran across his foot, and he went, wah! He screamed, He said, like, wow, you scared me, And God is Jayananda, So it's thinking like that. So it's just like, it's different levels, Like it's just the body's reacting, the mind reacting, and then maybe you're not afraid for your hide, but the prana circulating near your heart, that's a little more dear to you, and so the anxieties that are down near the heart, the prana problems there, or agitations there, you see that.
Right.
Since you become more introspective, you can see like the different things make the prana near your heart move this way and that way, then you can start to control it, but you realize this is still life errors, and beyond the life errors, of course, is the general ambience of sound that we're producing in the mind, everything else like that, the intelligence. So somebody very deep, fearlessness, some of these Buddhists and stuff. But beyond that, of course, is their basic conception that they're going to become God, way deep down. But they go through all these levels. And they're sometimes much more fearless than we are and everything else. But at heart, that's the real thing. And I think that's the point again too, is that Isha Upanishad, he prays, please save me. Even if I don't remember you, you remember me. all the things I've done for you. And so that's what's happening. The spiritual master sees we want out, and so he's giving us experiences which touch the heart, you know. And so even though we don't know we need this or what it is, you know, he's going on. Like, the baby doesn't know what nutrition it needs, but the parents didn't know that. So we're getting experiences which actually are touching us at a very deep level. And I see too some of these things, like, you know, fear of being buried alive or something like that, you know, something. Being shoved into a coffin and, you know, feeling the dirt being dumped on you, and here you are.
You know, we're all scarred from so many lifetimes. We've been eaten alive, you know, different body, or, you know, stuff has happened to us.
Yeah.
Scarred. And so, you know, maybe, you know, each person has this history. And certain things bother them because something happened in the past.
On the internet, this guy Weiss, he's a big psychologist, a psychiatrist, he got into past life regressions, and now they're accepted now. Most of these things are accepted. It was okay, you can investigate them, but be careful, you know. So the first one he did was actually one girl in the clinic where he was. He's a big psychiatrist in charge of the clinic, Mount Zion Psychiatric Clinic in Miami. So, one girl like there, a nice girl, you know, she was working in the hospital. She had claustrophobia. She couldn't take elevators, that kind of stuff. So he was doing this like regression. You know, usually you got something when you're 5 years old or something. So he told her to go back to when this first happened, you know. Okay, then he starts talking to her and she says, well, the centurion said this, the pharaoh said this, huh? So then he began to work on it. And she was back like something like 1000 BC or something in Egypt. And her master was like some high-ranking court official who died. And so along with his wife, they buried like 3 serving girls in the tomb with him alive. So she developed this real bad attitude towards closed spaces like that. And he would hop her, go forward, and she would hop, you know, several hundred years at a time or something and stuff. And it kept coming up where the experience was like, you know, this and that, you know. But yeah, but I know myself, it's just... chant japa, you just start chanting. Okay, here I am locked up in this tomb. You know, I can't even move my arms, my side to side, barely very much. It's pitch dark. And so then, okay, how nice. Like that. At last I get a little bit of relief. I can chant a few mantras here. You know, peace and quiet, you know, like that and so on. So devotee, I think, really... I mean, now you're chanting, you feel Krishna's there, you know. It's like when I say his name, he's there. And sometimes when I'm chanting in the wrong consciousness, he's not there. But very quickly I can be really addressing him, you know, addressing Radharani, and please, you pray to Krishna and Rama, you know. And so you begin to get a little bit of that experience, and it's the whole thing. And then these difficult experiences are good. The fear, you know, then causes us to retreat and investigate this. Like that. Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho.
Wow, amazing, Maharaj. Okay, anybody else have anything else?
Yes, I finally found the meaning of the name Jishnu.
Oh my God, where'd you find it?
Oh, actually, Madan Mohan was putting it in the chat, but go ahead.
It's from the Mahabharata, published by the Jaipur Press, edited by Nityananda Das Prabhu, summarized by Purna Prajna Prabhu. And in the conversation here, Arjuna says, I am called Jishnu because I am the son of Indra, and also because I am irrepressible in battle and I subdue all adversaries. Adversaries. That's apparently it has more than one exact meaning.
No, well, here he refers to as always victorious, so it sounds about the same.
Yeah, that one, yeah.
Jishnu. Jish. Okay.
Okay, Maharaj, thank you so much. That was great, especially the little part in the end about the research center past life regressions. That's amazing.
Yeah, if you look on the YouTube, I forgot the guy's first name, Weiss, and I think most of them, I think there's almost no, what they are, they're YouTube things, but they're like audio interviews. And it's very interesting, too, because he got into this, he didn't believe it. But after a while with this girl, it started becoming more and more obvious, and he got into it. Then the American Psychiatric Association called him up to try and, like, you know, can him. But he's a big guy, and he already contaminated a bunch of other psychiatrists. They were doing it. So finally they said, well, okay, just, you can do it, but be careful. And so now past life regression is considered like a... And it works, because that was one of the biggest things was, well, whether it's true or false, it works. And people get free from real anxieties that appear to be something in the previous life. So much on reincarnation now. But then, the other thing is interesting, he was thinking about past life regressions. He started thinking, well, what about future life progressions? And we can understand that. We come into this world because we've got a certain karma. You've got to be on this ride, then after that, you've got the next ride is working for you, waiting for you at the fun park. And maybe how we do things in this life will affect our karma in the future, but it may not necessarily, you know, change it all that much, you know, even as devotees, you know. So he started doing like hypnotizing people and taking them into the future. And he thought, let's not, like, you know, get into the lottery and stuff. So I think he would start at least like 100 years in the future, so it wouldn't be like people were predicting the lottery outcome or something, you know. And it was interesting because he got pretty much very, very common things. That for the next few hundred years, the world won't get any worse, but it won't get any better. And a lot of people are saying we're going to start harvesting the sea and doing that kind of work, you know. But after that, there's a time where people just kind of don't incarnate. Then beyond that, everything, the population is reduced without much violence, apparently. Maybe, I don't know, didn't kind of mention that. And everything is very nice, very beautiful, very peaceful. So it looks like that maybe what our preaching is going to do, what we're going to do, is we're going to establish enough Krishna consciousness in the world to keep things from getting worse. And that's quite an accomplishment. So don't become depressed if we're not making the whole world Krishna conscious right away. You know? And after that, yeah, Lord Chaitanya's movement will really kick in maybe like in about 500 years. I mean, we'll be fully there. The whole world will be like Goloka, like Vaikuntha. So it's interesting, you know? Yeah.
With regard to the past life regressions, it seems in conflict where Krishna says in Gita, what's that verse? Bhuni me vyatitani janmani tavacharjuna tanyaham veda sarvani. I remember them all. Natam veda parantapa, but not you, Arjuna. Oh, so subduer of the enemy. So, It sort of seems at odds with what Krishna is telling us in Gita, that we don't remember our past lives. And these psychiatrists or these practitioners, I mean, they're not like great yogis that have powers to turn us into jati smaras, which is certainly the great exception rather than the rule. So it makes me a little bit skeptical, based on what Krishna says in Gita. That I remember all, but not you, Arjuna. Natam veda parantapa.
Yeah, but I think he's referring to the present moment, like that. You don't remember right now. You don't remember because Tibetans, so many communities like Tibetans and everybody else who have been into reincarnation, they all, you know, until about 3 years old, your intelligence and your mind are not really integrated with the world around you so much. Anamaya, pranamaya, and so different things will stimulate the memories. They're there. The subtle body is there, and that's what makes us view the world in a certain way, because we remember them at heart. You know, why am I going to suffer or enjoy because of this? Or no, because at heart the memories are there, but they're very deep down. So at the present moment we don't remember them, but Krishna can remember them. Krishna can have access to them all the time. Our subtle body is memories, you know, and that's why, again, we have a certain ghost body that develops and stuff like that. You know? Yeah. And, yeah. So that's what I understand, you know.
Yeah. That's interesting. Interesting take on it.
Yeah. And because the thing is, that practically speaking, it's so prominent now for many different scientific investigations and everything else, that even the scientists are beginning to accept that, well, okay, it appears there is reincarnation. It appears that maybe there's something going on. Before it was, you were out of it, you know, if you even talked about it seriously, people would reject you from the whole scientific medical community. but not as many experiments and people. And of course, we've seen that girl, one Bhakti Churumar, is a disciple. You know that story about her? She's a disciple.
We had invited her to come on for our Sangha, and there was a presentation by Shureshwar. So she told her little story. She's very shy. But we know all about it because she came on our Sangha once and explained her previous lives as a brahmachari.
So some of the things you have access to, this is kind of a general principle in psychology. Even Prabhupada says this, Prabhupada didn't like the term unconscious. And also Carl Jung was also debating with Freud about this, that sometimes it's conscious, sometimes it's unconscious, you know, depending on what your state is. So, and anyway, I understand. In psychology, there's so much evidence like this of people, previous lifetimes and everything else. But of course, maybe it's somebody else's subtle body that you're connecting. It's not your subtle body. It's not your previous lifetime and stuff. But there's just so many where it can be matched up. And one more example. In Australia, you can see these on the internet too, I think. They did all these experiments. They invited ordinary people to come. And so many people came just participating. And they especially selected these ordinary people. Two of them, I remember, one was a lady about 38, and they regressed her, and she'd been killed during this Jewish conflict. She was a Jewish little girl, and then they took her back there, and they found the places. Another one was a lady who regressed back to like the 12th century in England or something, and she was using words that even an expert on that time period didn't know, had to look up a dictionary, and then he found the words, what they meant, like that. And she remembered a stone in the floor. So like half entranced, she just drew the lines in the stone. They took her to the place. She found this place. Now it was a chicken coop. So these experimenters from the university are saying to these people like out there, they say, well, this lady remembers this stuff. She's from Australia. She was here like 800 years ago. And of course, you're filming this. And of course, these like British people are looking, oh yeah, okay, loony birds from the university. And then they wanted him to help him dig up, the floor stone. Now it's covered by about, 3 inches of chicken stuff. It's Kaiser. So finally, dug up the 3 inches of chicken stuff, washed it off, and they had her drawing, and it matched up exactly with the drawing, and the loan thing. And then these country folk in England are about to just, go into catatonic shock and fall on the ground. They're just like, shocked, So there are many examples like that of people hanging on to their memories and stuff. So I think what it's saying again is you don't remember them now and stuff. But I guess I should go because at 11:45 I'm supposed to have another program here. So thank you all very much, and I hope to meet again one life after another.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Maharaj. Very nice class. Maharaj, I'm going to send you a note by Skype if you could answer it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna.